Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast and Pain Drain Pipe Bomb Productions. You all know who I am. I am the Bear of Texas. But please welcome back Tony freaking Trujillo of the Great Girth podcast. Tony, it's been too long, sir.
It has been a while, man. I'm glad to be back, though, because I've been watching a string of shitty WWE pay-per-views, dude, and haven't seen one good AEW show in a while. Finally caught an AEW pay-per-view, in this case, World's End. And, dude, it's something we got to talk about, because it was really good. It was fucking... I got a controversial opinion about it, too, so we'll get to that.
Well, that's good. You know, because lately my guest, the founder and CEO of Pain Train Pipe Bomb Productions, that's a huge part of the show, you know, he's been very honest about, you know, AEW and WWE, but he's basically expressed that he's enjoyed a lot of it, but he's not hesitant in pointing out some of the blunders, but
yeah,
that's just part of the program. You know, this is not about being negative or being ungrateful. This is just about basically being honest.
Yeah, it's just about having fun.
And sometimes when you appreciate pro wrestling the way you and I do, along with our friend Ricky, that sometimes we just have to point these things out.
Right.
But there's no such thing as a show that's going to be 100% perfect. But this show, AEW World's End, I can honestly say it was actually a very, very good show. I mean, there's a couple of returns, which we'll get to. But yes, the card, I mean, AEW always has a high stack card. But as Ricky pointed out, sometimes the order of the matches are wrong. The finishes are wrong. Things like that. There's always something that goes wrong, but that just shows that nobody's perfect. So, as far as I'm concerned, well, as far as Zero Hour, the pre-show, I mean, the highlight of that for me is obviously Tony Storm.
Yeah. I understand I mean, that.
Tony Storm, one of the many female pro wrestlers that I have a lot of respect for. I admire her. I appreciate her talent, her in-ring work, her promos, her character. Obviously, how many times have I said I love the Rockstar character, and the Rockstar recently came back?
Yes. Which I actually liked. I was very happy to see that. I thought it was cool. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a big Tony Storm person, but being able to see that was nice because I got tired of the whole whatever timeless. She was. Yeah, the timeless Tony Storm thing. It was just, yeah, it kind of ran its course.
Hollywood star, yeah.
Yeah. It ran its course.
It did, but I'm not going to lie. While I was selfishly saying that I preferred the Rockstar gimmick, the Timeless Tony Storm character was unique, very creative, but we knew eventually that it was eventually probably going to come to an end. Now, when she lost the Women's World title to Mariah May, she disappeared from AEW programming, and she competed in Japan and in Mexico for a Consejo... Consejo Mundial de Lucha Libre, I believe it's called, CMLL, and things didn't go too well, and there was actually a headline that she quit, which of course we knew was part of the storyline, so I knew, like, this might indicate that the Rockstar's coming back.
Yeah.
And she did come back, but something funny is coming out of it.
Yeah, it's got like that, I don't know, it's almost like maybe she's at war with herself, similar to like Eminem and Slim Shady, how they're two different people, but they're the same. Kind of wonder if that's what's happening. Maybe that's the, you know, what they're going to take it into. Who knows, though?
Yeah, she's like, it's like a case of amnesia. It's as if it's like all her past AEW, like, never happened. I mean, yeah, at first exactly. I'm like, okay, this is obviously mind games. She's trying to get in the head of Mariah May. At the same time, she's just, you know, Tony is just, you know, entertaining everybody, obviously. But she's been on a roll since she came back, so...
Oh, yeah, dude. I think she's been doing pretty well for herself, if you want my opinion on it. I mean, like I said, not the biggest fan, but it's cool to see that she's on a roll. It's cool to see that she's not just sitting it out, because there's a lot of wrestlers right now in AEW that are pretty much just sitting it out. Once their storyline is complete, they're just chilling at home for a little bit. And that kind of sucks, dude. So it's nice to see that they're utilizing her properly.
Absolutely. Because, you know, like I said, I'm a huge fan of Toni Storm. I admire her. I have nothing but love and respect for her. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, I just love how, even on Instagram, how she's like, you know, with all these videos of hers, you know, introducing herself to Thunder Rosa despite the past rivalry. I mean, it's great entertainment, I will say. So,
yeah.
It's good to have the rock star back. As far as basically them kind of building her back up in storyline, it makes sense that she's competing on the pre-show, so.
Yeah. It was an interesting decision, but, you know, I did not watch the pre-show, but I do know a little bit about what went down. The reason I didn't watch it was because they went all the way to, like, so for my time, it started at 4:30, but the show didn't actually start till 6. And I was like, I'm not watching an hour and a half of them talking and two matches, you know, so I just kind of went against it.
I mean, it makes me feel a little bit bad because, you know, like, again, Toni Storm, but also Jeff Jarrett worked a match with QT Marshall. Jeff Jarrett, obviously, for people like you and me, we've known this guy for God knows how long. I mean, the days of the Attitude WCW Era. The guitar, he was smashing the guitar on people.
Yep.
And Jeff Jarrett to this day, still a fantastic worker. Still a fantastic, you know, wrestler. Still good with the promos. I mean, the only difference is he's just older now. But he's still a great worker. Still a tremendous and useful asset in the industry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he teaches and mentors many wrestlers. I mean, he's a huge asset.
It will be interesting to see where his future takes him. Because I don't know if you saw, but for this Wednesday, for the first ever simulcast on Max, Jarrett has an announcement to make regarding his future. So we'll see where we're going with that one.
We'll see where we go. And once it happens, obviously, I'm sure I'll have to talk about it here. So as far as I know, I guess that kind of wraps up there was actually three matches on the pre-show. There was actually also an 8-man tag match.
Yeah.
Leo Rush. Yeah.
I caught a little bit of that, but I was cooking when I saw it, and so I didn't actually get to see the outcome of it.
So no comment on that one?
No, I don't have much to say about it.
I mean, an interesting, you know, 8-man tag match, you know, went about 11 minutes. You always see tag matches in a pre-show. I feel like tag matches are just part of pre-shows, but you had Leo Rush, Action Andretti, and the Murder Machines, which is Lance Archer and Brian Cage, defeat the Outrunners along with Top Flight, so.
Yeah.
So, the match that opened the card, I mean, that's a match that you expressed your admiration for. Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher in a Continental Classic semifinal.
It was great, dude. I thought it was awesome. I watched it, man, and I'm going to be honest. I'm slowly coming around to the Continental Classic, like the way it's set up. It took me a while to understand it last year. I was like, I don't get this, how it works now. But once everything was said and done, I was like, okay, it paid off. I think I came on the show and even told you, like, I think that the whole thing was smart. It paid off in the end. So I'm still coming around to it, though. And, like, this one, same thing. I was just kind of like, I understand it now, but the necessity for it is a whole other question. However, we get to game day, and you got Fletcher and Ospreay, which is, like, dude, arguably a big dream match for a lot of people. We've seen it before, but it's huge, dude, because that history goes far fucking beyond AEW. So it's a big deal to people. And I figured, okay, maybe it'll be good. I don't know. I mean, Will Ospreay puts out great matches, man. He's in the running for a lot of the best matches ever. But he has had a few exceptional ones. And so I was kind of worried that was going to be this. And it wasn't, man. It was good. It was really good. Was it long as shit? Yes, but I'm not going to lie, I kind of like that. That's one thing that I love about AEW is I love the long matches. I appreciate that. More is put into it.
Well, I feel because it's Will Ospreay versus Kyle Fletcher, and as you said, you know, the history with the two and the recent storylines and everything, it had to go the way it did. And I said, you know, Will Ospreay, for me, the greatest wrestler in the world today. Obviously, some people take exception to that, but this is not to disrespect anybody else. This is just my opinion, y'all.
Well, it's like you and I have always said, man. I don't disqualify someone because they're not in WWE. To me, WWE is not the end-all be-all. There are other leagues. There are other promotions. There's more to life than just WWE. So that's why people get mad about it. But to me, it's stupid. It's like, no, because I can tell you that Will Ospreay is a great wrestler, but in the same breath, I can also say that I love LA Knight. He's a good wrestler, too. There is nothing wrong with that. Yeah. People just love the rivalry, man. People love to shit on AEW. They need it to fucking live.
Yeah, and we'll never forget during that episode where we basically completely tore down the whole tribalism in pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And I have to take responsibility for it because once upon a time, I was a full-fledged disciple of AEW until I realized, you know what? This is not about being a fan of one promotion because you can't be a pro wrestling fan and be a fan of like one promotion. A passionate pro wrestling fan wants to follow all promotions, including the independent circuit. So
yeah,
it's good for me that changed. But Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher, I knew the match would be an absolute thriller because both guys are tremendously talented and they're always capable of giving the audience beyond a simple quality match. You can just tell that Ospreay and Fletcher, they trust one another. They're follow me, follow you. I mean, they're in that ring. They're working together. You can see that trust, that respect, and that chemistry between these two competitors. Now, they're obviously rivals on screen, but we all know by that love and respect because there's that chemistry and trust between them.
Yeah, exactly.
They did this together. One guy did not carry the other in the match. Both guys went out there. They worked. They did it together. They both gave us that great match.
I mean, I think if anything, dude, this match really built up the possibility of Kyle Fletcher being a solo act. He's always been a part of something, right? This just proves that like he can hang on his own. He doesn't need to be in a group. Yeah. So it showed that he's the next big thing. I mean, I will argue that Ospreay was immediately the star going into it. Fletcher is great too, but he's not on the same top of, you know, the level. And then you watch it and you're like, well, I could honestly say that I could see Fletcher doing his own thing. I could see him being a solo competitor.
See, I always knew he could, but in that match, as he's proven in the last couple of matches, he has further solidified himself to be able to basically be that single star. I mean, again, I've believed it since for a long time, but of course, there's always those fans that obviously either just like that or just simply say, I'm not too sure. I mean, if you weren't sure before, you're definitely sure now. And he's going to continue to prove himself. Kyle Fletcher is going to continue to prove himself. He's been doing just that, but he knows that there's always something else that he can show. So,
yeah.
So, and the fact that here you're working with Will Ospreay, I mean, dude, there you go.
And I will say this, it wasn't the best match of the night, but it was a hell of a way to kick off the show.
Amen to that, brother. And you know what? Sometimes I hate being that person. Oh, this match was better. This match was, you know what? For me, okay, there's one match that's going to be your favorite, but you know what? For me, the fact that the whole show, I was able to sit and enjoy it, that's what I'm grateful for. Yeah. I don't want to be grateful for just have one great match. I want to be grateful to have a fantastic show because I can come here on this program and talk about it with you.
I don't know about you.
A passionate and educated fan like you, Tony.
Well, didn't it feel like each match was just better than the last? It didn't feel like anything slowed down. It didn't feel stale. Like
it was scaling back and forth. It was like a balance, like just moving like that. But at the same time, my eyes were glued on that TV screen. My butt was in the seat.
Oh, yeah. I think I don't even think there was a match that I was actually bored in at all. I don't think I had one bad match. No, I enjoyed every single match.
No. The next one, Okada versus Ricochet.
So
in a Continental Classic semifinal.
This one was good too. I gotta say, I thought it was good. Could it have been done differently though, like a little more? Yes. I am gonna say that. I do think that we could have done more with it. I expected a whole hell of a lot more, but what's obviously happening here is that Ricochet is being thrown into a storyline with Swerve. So he's clearly not going to be the winner. Why would you invest so much time in that when he's leaving to go do this? So it kind of makes sense in that, you know, after what happens at the end of the match with Ricochet getting TP'd and shit. So, I mean,
which I didn't really understand. I mean, what was that about?
Oh, we'll find out on Wednesday because him and Swerve apparently are getting some real beef. So, I mean, it will be an interesting story. I will say that I used to not care for Swerve at all, dude. It took him becoming champion for me to really find any interest in him. And now I'm like, yeah, he's a caliber player. I want to see him and Ricochet because I've always viewed Ricochet as a good wrestler. I think he's great. He just wasn't able to be himself in WWE, dude. They fucking fumbled the ball on him.
Well, ain't that an understatement? I mean, we all know about the dude's career in Japan. Now, Ricochet has recently, he's showing signs of a heel turn, so he hasn't officially dropped that heel turn bomb yet, but it's getting there. So I would assume that he could very well join the Hurt Syndicate, because if that whole thing would Swerve at the end, so that means that Swerve and the Hurt Syndicate is nowhere near being done, which I would which I'm thankful for, because that's definitely got so much potential. But yeah, it was just interesting to see Okada actually kind of be the babyface in this one.
Yeah, it was a little different.
Yeah, but you know what? There was that spot in the match, I think, that slapped to the back of the head. Especially the way Okada, I think, was running around the ring. I mean, I was like,
dude, like,
add a little bit of humor, add a little bit of comedy, no big deal. It's part of the entertainment aspect.
Yeah.
But Okada and Ricochet had a very good quality match.
Yeah,
Ricochet at the end did not look good in the ring. Swerve came out and taunted him. Prince Nana handing out the rolls of toilet paper to the crowd.
Right.
Oh, boy.
A little disrespectful.
Yeah, it's just funny because at first I was like, okay, because I wasn't fully aware of the heel tactics of Ricochet, but thankfully I did some research. But
I
thought Swerve at first was showing the signs of the heel turn, but he's in a rivalry with this Hurt Syndicate, so why would he be the heel?
Exactly. He's more of a babyface.
It's just the babyface taunting the heel, because it's usually the other way around. So Swerve is kind of basically doing a little swerve. But
nice to see.
So obviously that means that in the foreseeable future, probably at the next pay-per-view or so, we're obviously going to see Swerve versus Ricochet.
I was going to say that's where they're heading with it. That's why I think they didn't put so much time into that match for that reason.
Right. So obviously we would expect Ricochet to join the Hurt Syndicate. I mean, now recently they rejected and attacked him, right? But we think, okay, that's just part of their plan. The Swerve Syndicate wants everybody to believe that he's not going to join, and then Ricochet joins. We've seen that. We've seen these stunts before. When a group rejects a certain wrestler and attacks him, but he eventually joins that group. I mean, we saw that back in the day with the NWO.
Yeah. Well, eventually Ricochet will join them.
We saw that with the Four Horsemen back in the day.
That's
except
a throwback.
We're too young. We're too young to remember the days of the Four Horsemen.
Yes, I only remember it from looking at my dad's VHS tapes. I've told you this before. Like, I grew up watching a lot of 80s wrestling because we didn't really have cable.
Wrestling, as they say. But yeah, so the first two matches, incredible. But then we get to Mariah May versus Thunder Rosa in a Tijuana street fight for the AEW Women's World Championship.
So I will say this. If I had to pick a match that I think is my least favorite, it was probably this one. It was still a good match. I definitely enjoyed it. In terms of length, though, and effort, dude, I'm going to be honest. I think it's probably low-hanging fruit for me. I would say this one is the one that... No, I take that back. This is the one that I kind of stepped away from the TV for a while to do some other stuff. So I was definitely a little bored by this match, I'm not going to lie. However, I would come in and out to see what was going on. And those some pretty good shots there. I liked some of the stuff they did. I would say, in my opinion, it's fair to say that this was the least good match of the entire card.
I can see. I mean, for me, I want Thunder Rosa to become the AEW Women's World Champion again. Now, on this show, one point, because you know how AEW All In next year is going to be in my home state of Texas.
Yep.
And I said that the main event for that match should be a four-way women's match for the AEW Women's World Championship. And Thunder Rosa should become champion at AEW All In Texas. And I say, it should be a four-way match or a fatal four-way. It should have Anna Jay, and just name a few. I think it should have Camille as well. And, of course, the champion. So we have the defending champion, Thunder Rosa, Anna Jay, and Camille. That should be the fatal four-way women's match in the main event of AEW All In, and Thunder Rosa wins and becomes champion. So
I don't know about the main event.
No,
but I can understand the appeal.
Yes, that should be the main event of AEW All In. It's got to be the main event, in my honest opinion. But
I am considering
again, it's easy
going.
For me to say because Thunder Rosa is my hero. I do look up to her. I admire her. I always say if there was one female wrestler I would love to be trained by, it would be Thunder Rosa. because I feel she's such a tremendous worker. She's such an influence in the women's division. And because but not only in the women's division, she's a strong influence in the business, period.
Well, I will say that the women of AEW, they're much more interesting to me than the women of WWE, just because I blame the writers for that, for making the women's division boring to me. But the same could be said about AEW's women division, which I don't think it's boring. I just think that there are certain wrestlers that they won't push versus the ones that they do. And that, like, me personally, dude, I'm not really a big Mariah May person. I mean, I thought it was cool they gave her the belt. I just was like, that seems like, I don't know, it just seemed too soon to me. But then again, she did work in, you know, women of wrestling and stuff like that. She had done all types of stuff. So, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know, but I'm considering going to that All In because that's not a far travel.
Right. You know what? It'd be awesome if you and I both went there, but
we got to see how much right those tickets are.
There's obviously more important things on my mind right now, like you know, with my family right now. Yeah. So I'm not thinking about that right now. But no, I'm dead set that the main event for AEW All In should conclude with Thunder Rosa becoming the new AEW Women's World Champion in a Fatal 4-Way featuring the champion, of course, and Anna Jay and Camille, the former NWA Women's World Champion. That's just basically me being the strong and vocal advocate and supporter of women's wrestling. That's just me like that. But you know what? Women's wrestling matters. And Thunder Rosa deserves to be champion again. But obviously for me, her not becoming champion, okay, it hurts me a little bit again. Thunder Rosa's my hero. But at the same time, it would ruin my prediction and my aspirations for the main event of AEW All In.
Yeah.
But... all right, Maxwell Jacob Friedman versus Adam Cole for this AEW Dynamite Diamond Ring.
This was a good match, too, but again, it's one that I do feel like they could have done it a whole lot differently. I enjoyed it. I thought it was great, but I just feel like there wasn't a lot put into this match. There was a lot of buildup for the storyline, but I just feel like there wasn't a lot of, really a lot of moves put into this match. It just kind of seems like this one was strung along, but I mean, for what they did, it was still good. It was still enjoyable. I really do think they could have done this one a whole lot better.
Well, see, to me, I'm still amazed because we remember the whole story with MJF and Adam Cole when they were teaming together. They were
that's how far back it goes.
And then Adam Cole's the one who betrays MJF. When MJF loses the belt and goes on a hiatus, and then MJF comes back, but it's MJF as the heel, not Adam Cole.
Right.
So yeah, all of a sudden that reversed. I was like, well, that really was blindsiding to me. So at first I was like, yeah, this is a huge mistake, MJF being the heel in this one, especially with what they built up prior. But
yeah.
I mean, I knew that was not going to sit, and I wasn't sure if that would sit well for me, but...
I love him as a heel, but he's a good babyface as well. He's shown that he can do both, but I think that he's better as a heel, depending on the situation.
MJF, no doubt, yeah. Obviously, MJF is tremendous as a heel.
But the problem with this situation, dude, is like, who's the heel and who's the babyface? Because they both represent themselves as heels in this one. Because Adam Cole turned on MJF, right? MJF can't stand him no more. MJF is back as a bad guy. But technically, Adam Cole is a bad guy, too. He's kind of a good guy, but like they paint them as heel versus heel, basically. So it's really hard to figure out who to care for in this match. And I will say this. I knew from the get-go they were going to give MJF the ring. Just because he's done it 5 years in a row now, what if this were to become like a running tradition for him? Like, Undertaker never lost at WrestleMania for a long time. What if the tradition is MJF never loses that Dynamite Diamond Ring? It's a possibility. And why would you give it to Adam Cole? What has he done to earn that? He hasn't been around much. He's been injured. And when he's around, he's not around. He's just barely in the ring. So if they were going to give it to someone, it definitely shouldn't be Adam Cole. But I like Adam Cole too, so it's kind of hard to like say that. But I will say, dude, I knew from the get-go that they were going to give it to MJF again, which I think was kind of smart. But how they ended it made no sense. That should have been the ending if MJF were to have lost. Like, what was the point letting him win just to show that, hey, United Kingdom is back? Like, it just made no sense that was the decision. You know what I mean? Like, what the fuck?
I love how you said that, the United Kingdom. I think you mean the Undisputed Kingdom.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Undisputed, sorry.
Yeah, because obviously... because of
O'Reilly
the
joined them.
Yeah, Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly came back. They helped, you know, they took out MJF after the match. They helped Cole to their feet.
Yeah.
Because keep in mind, during the match, Adam Cole had two gentlemen by his side, which, of course, you know, Matt Tavern and Mike Bennett. So now that, you know, Tavern and Bennett are still with Cole, and then Roderick Strong and Kyle O'Reilly are back. Yeah, the Undisputed Kingdom is back.
Yeah, like, basically.
And they're back, cool baby.
It's cool to see, you know. It's really cool to see, but it's just like, why did you do it after MJF won? That would have been great to show how MJF loses, but whatever, you know. Like, I do think that it was smart of them to say, give it to MJF again. He's clearly the bigger person, in my opinion. He is one of the biggest wrestlers that AEW has, if not the biggest. He is, in terms of popularity. Because, unfortunately, not a lot of people know who Will Ospreay is that don't watch anything other than fucking WWE. But a lot of people that only watch WWE do know who MJF is. So it's, you know, he's the caliber star. It made sense that he was the champion for as long as he was. It took a while for me to be interested in him as the champion, but, dude, he's a fucking star. He's huge. It makes sense that he won.
Right.
It was a good match. Just could have been done differently.
It was recently, you see, Dustin Runnels. See, recently somebody said that MJF's run or whatever is reaching its conclusion, and then Dustin Runnels argues that. I'm like, no, MJF is... I don't even think we've seen anything yet out of MJF, dude.
No, dude.
We're not even at the bottom of the second inning.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. I would say okay. You know, I think by now we're probably in the top of the third inning as far as MJF and his run at AEW. No, MJF has far more left to offer on the table. Again, we've probably seen nothing yet from MJF.
Right.
But the way he won, if I remember correctly, yeah. After Tavern and Bennett were ejected because MJF did the typical heel, fakes an injury and makes it as though he was attacked. He pulls out the ring, tries to use it. It doesn't work, but eventually resorts to a low blow before hitting his finisher for the win.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's the second half of the match that really actually really caught our attention. But
yeah, first starting out, it was kind of like, but it was a good match all around. I wouldn't say it was an amazing match, but it was good enough that I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Definitely. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't think Adam Cole and MJF are finished yet.
No, there's so much more to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. Well, next match, Takeshita versus Powerhouse Hobbs, a singles match for the AEW International Championship.
This one was good. How do you feel about the ending though? I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good match. I didn't think it was that like bad at all.
Well, why don't you actually explain to everybody how the ending went?
So, hold on. I'm hitting a brain fart. So I was super drunk. Well, no, I watched it front to back, but I was super fucking drunk. I can hardly remember. I just know when I came down, I was kind of like, ooh. I don't know if that's just me that had that feeling, though. I was like, ooh.
I'm not really even honestly sure what to say, to be honest with you. Because, you know, Powerhouse Hobbs, you know, still kind of selling, he was selling a knee injury for most of the match. He had recently come back from an injury, so...
Yeah, but
Hobbs, well, as far as the ending goes, I honestly don't know what to say about that, but at least Hobbs was actually able to make himself look good.
Yeah, that's kind of how I put it. Yeah. I just think that
I just would not have expected Hobbs to become champion. I mean, does Hobbs deserve to have a singles title put on him? Sure.
No.
Just not yet, but it has
not
to be
yet.
Built.
Yeah,
it has to be
like,
built.
That's the thing, dude. There was no build up to it. It was just I'm coming after the Don Callis family because they rejected me and didn't care about me. Whatever. That's
exactly. Actually, yeah.
That's an okay setup, but like there's no buildup. And then, hey, I'm coming after fucking him. And then he wins and actually gets the belt. That's weird. But it's a questionable decision that I'm not afraid to say is weird. I really wouldn't have given it to Hobbs. As much as I like him, it's not time for that yet. And didn't Homeboy just win that belt not too long ago?
I think so, yeah.
I don't know, dude. Like, it was a good match. I really enjoyed it, but the ending is just...
Yeah, he won it back in October 12th.
Yeah, see, that's a short amount of time. Well, okay, to be fair, 3 months is how mid-card titles get switched around a lot, which is stupid, but I don't know, man. I just didn't think that that was the way that was going to go. I remember coming downstairs and seeing him with it on him, and I was just like, wait a minute. What did I miss? And so, you know, after seeing that, I was just kind of like, that was weird. It feels like that was a, maybe I'm speaking out my ass, but it feels like that was like, hey, we need you to come back now that we have something for you. And this is what we're going to give you in hopes that you'll come back. Because what if Hobbs didn't want to come back at all? You heard rumors about his contract and all that. And so it's like, was this a way to keep him happy? Or was this part of the plan all along? It just seems a little weird. It's early for me. I mean, Hobbs, he's established himself as a wrestler, especially outside of the whole, what he was doing with Team Taz and all that. When he broke out, that's when I really started to find interest in him, especially when he was doing the Book of Powerhouse Hobbs. And then like that disappeared. So like, you know, what now? And then he's suddenly back. I just don't, it's the equivalent to when a wrestler goes to another promotion and immediately wins a belt on their first night. It's too soon. Yeah. It's like weird. It was a good match though, dude. I'm not trying to complain about it.
Right. I mean, he's definitely improved tremendously as a wrestler. So if he continues to have great matches and continues to get over, then he'll be in a position to where he'll be ready to hold the title. Yeah. He definitely deserves to be a singles champion, but it's got to be done correctly, because if it's not done correctly, it's not good. It won't be good on him. He's got to get fully over. So again,
my fear,
he's feuding with a Callis family, and he continues to feud with them, and then eventually earn himself a new match after maybe defeating all the members and whatnot. Then he'll be in that position where he can win the belt.
Well, my fear with that match was that it was going to be awkward, because Hobbs is obviously a bigger built dude. Homeboy is not, but he's a good fighter. So like, it just, to me, I was worried going into it, dude, because I had a feeling this was going to be like Hook versus Jericho. No. And just how like they didn't mesh well. That wasn't the case here. I thought that they did great together.
Well, keep in mind, Takeshita losing the belt in this one would have been bad, because Takeshita is on his way to Japan to compete.
So, yeah.
Again, we got Wrestle Dynasty coming up, and of course we got Wrestle Kingdom 19 coming up. And Takeshita is actually scheduled to work both shows. As a matter of fact, one of the shows at Wrestle Dynasty, Takeshita will work Shingo Takagi along with him or Tomohiro Ishii. He's actually going to work a match for the NEVER Openweight Championship and the AEW International Championship.
Yeah.
So it would not. So him losing would not be. Yeah, it would not be good. So I understand why. So again, he's working a match for the, you know, in a match to where the NEVER Openweight Championship and the AEW International Championship are on the line. That's for Wrestle Dynasty. Now for Wrestle Kingdom 19, Takeshita will actually work. Now he says, okay, he's actually working a winner takes all match for the NEVER Openweight Championship and the AEW International Championship. So, yeah, so this whole thing has me confused. Okay, but the bottom line is Takeshita is going to be working in Japan. So in the next pay-per-views in New Japan's next show. So because of the matches they have set up, yeah, he couldn't lose the belt in this one.
Yeah, wait a minute. Hold on, I got my shit all wrapped. I thought Takeshita lost.
No, Takeshita beat Powerhouse Hobbs.
Why did I fucking see? Oh, that must have been right when they were taunting him. Okay, so I didn't see much of the, like, I saw half of the match, dude, and then I came down and I thought Hobbs won. I was like, what? I thought fucking Powerhouse won, dude. I really did. So forget everything I just said about that. That was my worry. Yeah, I was
all right. I mean,
no, you're good. That's why I was like, I don't know what to say
because Takeshita is going to be working in Japan, because he's got those two matches for the two titles on the line, the NEVER Openweight Championship, and he's defending the AEW International Championship. So, yeah, so I think if he wins, okay, so I guess if he wins his first match and becomes, you know, wins that other title, I would guess the next night on Wrestle Dynasty, he faces Tomohiro Ishii. I mean, again, that's how sophisticated and pro wrestling is, but at the end of the day, I love it.
Yeah.
So, but again, it makes sense as to why Takeshita could not lose the belt to Powerhouse Hobbs.
I need to go back and rewatch that match then, dude. I missed a good majority of it. What was the next one?
All right, the next one was Mercedes Moné versus Chris Statlander for the AEW TBS Championship.
I missed the beginning of this, the first 10 minutes of it. But
that was actually the longest match of the card.
I rewatched it, and I gotta say, dude, not only is it the longest, I think it's the best match of the card. It pissed a lot of people off that I said that on Facebook and all that. I had to delete it, but...
Whoa, wait. People got mad at you because you said that Mercedes Moné and Chris Statlander was the best match on the card?
Oh, yeah, it's because they hate Mercedes Moné, dude. They don't like her. Everyone... There's a group of people that make it their life to hate this person. Like, for some unknown reason.
They have no respect for Mercedes Moné, which is absolutely shameful. Shame on those people.
Yeah,
number two, they're just mad because you have an opinion that they never would have thought about.
No, dude. Yeah, theirs is always, oh, she's not over. She'll never be over. And here she is as champion. Here she is making all this money. Here she is giving out good matches, in my opinion. Like, does she do some shitty matches? Yes. In the past, she's had some shitty matches. But she was great in WWE. She's been doing okay here. And this match proved, dude, how good she really is. Like, that was a good fucking match, dude. I honestly think that was the best one. The one that excited me the most was the main event. But this one, I gotta say, it was probably the best match of the card, dude. It was fucking good.
I mean, Mercedes Moné is actually, she's going to be working with Mina Shirakawa at Wrestle Dynasty in a winner-takes-all match for the Strong Women's Championship and the Undisputed British Women's Championship.
See, I assumed that she wasn't going to lose the TBS champion just because she's only had it for a couple months, and they are trying to build her as like the next big thing for being someone that has the TBS champion, at least from the looks of it. I just didn't see them giving it to Statlander right away, especially because this is part two. I got a feeling there might be a part three and a part four, maybe. We'll see. But I just didn't see them giving it to Statlander. I mean, she held it before, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not a crime to not give it to her right now.
No. I think because of the similar situation, Mercedes Moné, again, she's going to be competing in Japan at Wrestle Dynasty on the 5th of January at the Tokyo Dome. And as I just said, she's working a huge match, a winner-takes-all match against Mina Shirakawa, a winner-takes-all match for the Strong Women's Championship and the Undisputed British Women's Championship.
Yeah.
And because, you know, Mercedes Moné is also the New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong Women's Champion. So, obviously, because of that, again, that's why she could not lose the belt.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, see, again, it shows that, you know, when promotions work together, they have to make these decisions. No, he can't lose this night. If he's going to defend the title this night, he can't lose the title this night. So, I mean,
yeah,
it is overwhelming, again, that whole thing with Takeshita. A lot of these are very overwhelming. It confuses you, but you know what? It shows how much we get on our plates, especially the wrestling fans that we are, the ones we don't just stick to one promotion. We appreciate wrestling as a whole. You and I have so much on that plate, and we're trying to figure out, can we really finish our dinner?
Yeah, there's a lot going on, especially because, dude, we're heading into WrestleMania territory, which is the busiest time of the year.
Yeah, the Royal Rumble's coming up, obviously, and announcement in the Royal Rumble, Kevin Owens versus Cody Rhodes in a ladder match.
Definitely that I do want to see.
Yeah.
At first, I didn't want to see any of it, dude, because I just didn't like the buildup, but now I'm finally getting with it, so now I want to see that. But before we get off topic...
Well, how many times, Tony, have you said that a lot of storylines, it may take a while for you to be invested in it?
It does, dude. It takes a while. Yeah. Like,
a lot of fans are like that. I mean, especially fans like us, because we're not... The fans that we are right now, we weren't always like this, so...
Yeah, dude, pretty much.
You got to morphosize into a educated and passionate and... at times a critical fan, then, you know, your mind kind of, you know, has a hard time adapting to it. But but last thing about Mercedes Moné versus Chris Statlander. I mean, Chris Statlander, again, before AEW, I had no idea who she was, which makes me feel absolutely rotten because Chris Statlander has been pushing, you know, kicking down doors and really making an impact before AEW. Let's not forget she was trained by Brian Myers. And of course, and Pat Buck. So she's done a lot now. AEW was basically like her first big break, but she's been doing fantastic at AEW. She's battled several ACL injuries. I mean, she's gone through a lot.
Yeah.
She's done everything. So, and I really believe Chris Statlander has all, you know, again, we have not even seen the best of her yet. So
gotta say, I agree. Cause Same thing, man. I wasn't big on her until her rivalry with Willow Nightingale. Then I was just interesting.
Oh, dude, that was fantastic.
Yeah, that's when I was she is a good wrestler. She's very interesting. I mean,
the feud between Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale,
right?
My God, kudos to both of them.
Mm.
And that's a rivalry. We just want to thank them both because, again, it takes two to tango. They did it together. They worked together. They trusted each other. You see, when that happens, when everything goes good, you see, you get a rivalry that we can't forget, that we're always going to be thankful for.
Yeah, so exactly.
Yeah, so hats off to Chris Statlander for everything. Oh. Of course, to Mercedes Moné for a great match. All right, here we go. Okada versus Will Ospreay.
I thought this was a good
Classic
match, too.
Final for the AEW Continental Championship.
Dude, I thought this was a really good match, too. I actually enjoyed this more than the first match, Will Ospreay and Fletcher. I enjoyed this match way more.
I mean, Ospreay bandaged up, still had blood on his gear. I mean, hey, you know what?
It was good, man. I thought it was great.
I would have said to myself, no, if I bleed in my first match and I have another match coming up, oh, no, I'm not. Okay, now I got to make sure the bleeding stops, but no, I'm going to make sure the blood stains everything. I'm going to keep that on.
And I agreed with the ending just because I don't think that Will Ospreay needs another belt right now. I don't think we need to throw belts at him like it's candy. I think that we should develop him more and more for an AEW style. Every wrestler has a style when they're in a promotion. There's always a difference between WCW Goldberg and WWE Goldberg. There's a big difference. You can just see it, dude. And so something like this, like, I want that. I like Will Ospreay because of all his stuff in Japan, but like, I want an AEW style of Will Ospreay. I want to see what AEW's vision of him is. And right now, just throwing fucking belts at him doesn't make any sense to me. I'm like, no, let's get him in some good rivalries first. Let's put him into some good shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I like
build him up, make him have all this momentum. You know, do it correctly. I mean, you see, putting the belt prematurely on a wrestler, is fatal not only for the wrestler, but for the wrestler who drops the belt to that wrestler, for creative, for the other wrestlers, because the company gets affected too.
Yes.
But most of all, this affects professional wrestling altogether. Well, Dominoes drop, and there's a lot of damage to a lot, and if it does eventually get fixed, it takes a long time.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
I will say the only negative for this match was the length of it. It was longer than it needed to be, in my opinion. But
go back to what I just said. People would ask, well, then why do they put the belt on Hulk Hogan in his first night in WCW?
Yeah.
Because it's Hulk Hogan.
It's Hulk Hogan. You would do the same thing to John Cena if he joined AEW right now. Guaranteed they would.
You know, as a kid, I would have thought that would have been the greatest thing, but as an educated pro wrestling fan, absolutely not.
I liked it just because I was Team WCW as a kid, but I get where people are like, what the fuck? That's weird. You know what I mean? Like, that's my opinion. If Will Ospreay were to go to AEW and win a belt on his first night, I would have been pissed. I would have been like, what the fuck? No, that's pissing on others that work hard.
If it was a storyline that was building in Japan and what, if he was beating a wrestler that he had a long-standing rivalry with in Japan and the storyline, they had a storyline between the two going to that, okay, fine. But because that's not the case, then no. Yeah. Now, if he was to beat somebody that he had been feuding with in Japan for a long time and still feuding as he was coming to AEW, then okay, fine. But since that wasn't the case, then no.
Yeah.
I think the next belt that Will Ospreay, I mean, sooner or later, they're going to have to put him in the AEW world title picture. But they got to build that, and they got to build him as he's pursuing the championship.
Not right now.
Yeah, maybe not right now. Again,
in like a year or two, I'd say.
Will Ospreay is a massive draw. He's a fantastic wrestler.
Oh, yeah.
He's an artist. He's a freaking artist. He's a guy that you cannot dare botch and drop the damn ball with.
Yeah.
If you drop the ball with Will Ospreay, it makes the company look bad, but most of all, it'll make Ospreay look bad. And that is a fatal mistake.
Because the fans
love him so much that he'll be fine with the fans, but still.
Right. I've been saying, dude, that Ospreay and Bryan Danielson, that match from Wrestle Dream is still like the best match I've seen from Will Ospreay in years.
Whoa, baby.
That's a great one, man. The ending was ridiculous, but that happened for a reason. But that was a good match, man. Like, that was such a huge match that people that don't like AEW watched it. And they were like, that was fucking great. That was phenomenal. It's like, yeah, that's what real wrestlers do when they care about the fans. But it's hard when you're a promotion that focuses on just wrestling and not much storyline. However, I've noticed that AEW is getting better about storyline. And here's a good example of that. The main event.
Mm-hmm.
They go, yeah, dude, like... We see how it ends. We see exactly what's happening next. We've been told, like, this is the next direction. And it's awesome because of the fact that who better to be a rival to Moxley and the current Death Rider Moxley that we get? The rated R superstar, dude. Somebody that did that before him. You know what I mean? Like, I loved the way it ended. I knew that Moxley was going to win. That was not a fucking... a dur to me. Like, he just won that belt a few months ago, so he's carrying it for a while. They are investing so much time in him.
The Death Riders are basically, Well, before I get into that, the Okada, what happened after Okada beat Ospreay? Because you talk about the return of the Rated R Superstar.
Oh, yeah, Kenny Omega.
Kenny Omega.
Yeah, yeah. That's the match I would rather see as the main event at All In.
And some wrestling fans forgot Omega and Okada. All the matches in Japan, there is a history between the two. Now people say, okay, because Okada months ago attacked Omega along with the Young Bucks, there was that. But no, it's far beyond that. It's the history between Omega and Okada in Japan.
Well, and if you're educated like you and I are,
ladies and gentlemen, do the research.
Yeah. It's a dream match that we want to see again. If you're educated like you and I are, you know about the history and the rivalry there that's never went away. And so that little moment of face-to-face between the two solidifies what's next in the future. And honestly, dude, I firmly believe that should be the main event of All In, those two. Or at least that should be the first match. It's probably not going to happen because it sounds like Omega's still hurt. But he's going to be playing an on-screen role, obviously. So we'll see where it goes.
Actually, Kenny Omega is actually going to be working a match at Wrestle Dynasty. He's going to be working.
He's cleared Gabe finally. Kidd.
Yeah. Yes. This match, Kenny Omega and Gabe Kidd. I mean, yeah, this was announced a couple of months ago. I even did an episode on this program. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, on January 5th at Wrestle Dynasty, Kenny Omega will work a match against Gabe Kidd. So yeah,
I don't know if I'm gonna probably not gonna watch it live, but I'll catch it.
Omega will not. From what I see, he's not working at Wrestle Kingdom 19, but I'm pretty sure he's probably going to be there.
Yeah,
but yeah, he's not going to be working a match. Again, you know, he's working. You know, he's working. You know, Gabe Kidd, which is something huge. You know, at first I asked Ricky, who was on this show for that episode, does Kenny Omega have to win that one, or does Gabe Kidd go over? And he says no, Omega has to win.
Yeah, he has to. He's the star, man, in my opinion, but...
Absolutely. So, yeah, I'm glad I mentioned that, but the match, you know, all the counters and the close two counts, man. Okada and Ospreay, again, another thriller, but...
Oh, yeah.
But then at the end, I think, you know, Okada and... Okada did shake Ospreay's hand, so... But... Before the match started, I mean, the crowd was so into it. I mean, you know what they were chanting.
Yep.
Yeah. So here we go. Now we're at the main event. Right. Moxley versus Orange Cassidy, Hangman Adam Page, and Jay White in a four-way match for the AEW World Championship.
I thought it was a good match. I liked the... I got to say this, dude. I liked the length of it. I thought the length was appropriate. It was perfect. Could it have been longer? Yes. But... given the fact that it's a fatal four-way, we kind of already know who's going to win. We're more or less just trying to find out what happens afterwards because of that shit that he pulled with Darby Allin and how FTR chased them off a few weeks ago. We knew something was coming. I will say this, though. I think the man that stood out the most in that match was Jay White. He was the best of all four of them. Cassidy was great, too. Hangman, kind of disappointed in Hangman. He wasn't around much, it felt like. I mean, he was around, but it just felt like the spotlight wasn't really on him.
You just feel that he could have done more.
Yeah, he could have done more, dude. I feel like Jay White is the one that really stood out. Moxley got beat up on a lot the entire time. And there's this classic rule, if you're a real wrestling fan, especially one that grew up with a dad that did wrestling, there's this classic rule, the one that gets beat up the most is the one that's going to win the match. Usually, not always. The one that gets hit, beat up, that's the one that's going to win. Yeah.
Right. Especially when he's the heel, yeah, it works. Yeah. I mean, he was powerbombed through a table.
He was out. Yeah. I'd say he wrestled about 70% of that match. The rest of it was the other three.
And Jay White had a spot where he performed a certain move on Marina Shafir.
Finally, dude, I can't stand that character. Like, nobody will hit her because she's a woman. It's like, dude, come on. Somebody's got to be
there's,
brave.
Intergender wrestling has... You see more of it nowadays, so...
I know, dude. That's why I'm like, it's so stupid to sit there and say, like, no wrestler would put his hands on her. Like, Jay White will. You know what I mean? That's what happens when you get a heel. I thought that Christian Cage was going to be involved too, but clearly him and Hook aren't done yet either.
Right. And of course, you know, now that Adam Copeland's back, I mean, hey, that just got even more interesting.
I've actually got a theory that Hook is going to pursue Christian Cage in a match for that contract. And I have a feeling that Hook might win it. I'm afraid that that's the case because I don't think that Hook is AEW championship ready. Not close. He did good as the FTW champion, but let's be real, dude, that wasn't a recognized champion. And he needs to work on his craft a little bit. I'm not the wrestler, so I can't talk shit, but I have a feeling that's where we're headed. That at some point, he's going to be Christian Cage for that fucking contract. Or somebody beats Moxley finally, and we're all happy, and then Christian comes out and fucking takes over. But I think people would be pissed off.
It was Adam Copeland, but... wouldn't that be funny? Yeah, Copeland beats Moxley for the title and then Cage.
Right, and then Cage wins it. Yeah, dude, that would be fucking... I will say this, dude. I can guarantee you that at some point, Christian Cage will be AEW World Champion, if not for a day. Because all those big-name wrestlers, they typically do give them that shot for a night, a week, whatever. I don't think he'll hold it for very long. I just know to say that he did it, to put him in the books, because he not only deserves it and it's over. Dude, Christian Cage should have been world champion in WWE. And he was for a little bit.
He was in 2011,
For a tiny bit, yeah. And it's like, dude, he deserved it. Like, are you kidding me? And so the fact that AEW has not put a belt on him, except for the TNT champion, I was impressed to the point that I was like, dude, I think I could see him holding the belt for a few months. Why not, dude? I think he's earned it. He's a fucking legend. But anyway, getting off topic.
Hold the belt, but he doesn't. Yeah, I mean, if he holds the belt, it doesn't have to be for a long time.
It could
probably be for maybe 42 to maybe 70 days, something like that.
It doesn't need to be long at all.
He doesn't need to be a long-term champion.
I mean, even now, just to lose it at the next pay-per-view or something. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah. So, you know, now for me. Or if Orange Cassidy, people think I'm crazy. No, Orange Cassidy being AEW World Champion, it can work. I think Darby Allin next year in 2025. I mean, this is the last episode of 2024. Many believe Darby Allin could become World Champion next year.
I think it's long overdue. I think he should have been champion a year.
Maybe
ago,
he should be the one to beat Jon Moxley. I don't know.
I bet you he will be. That's probably what we're headed towards. But
then again, Darby Allin was supposed to do the climb Mount Everest, so I think he still plans on doing that, so
we'll see.
Maybe basically he loses the belt and then the next day he goes off on his expedition.
Yeah
maybe he loses it to Orange Cassidy. You know what, and if Darby Allin were to drop the belt to Orange Cassidy in a high caliber main event match, man, I'd be immediately on my computer. I'm like, no, I'm talking about this right now.
Right. And see, I can see Jay White being AEW World Champion. I'm fine with that. Hangman had his run. He doesn't need to go again for a little bit. Orange Cassidy, I would like to see as champion at some point because I do think he's a good wrestler. I think his gimmick is awesome. I just feel like they don't focus on him a lot. So that's why he's kind of a mid-carder, as everyone likes to call him. But I'm like, no, dude, he's a top talent, dude. He's great. They just keep putting him in all these smaller fucking storylines because... A, according to Backroom Talk, he's a team player. That's what he likes doing. But I want to see him as champion at one point. I wasn't shocked, though, that Moxley won.
He's a two-time AEW International Champion, is Orange Cassidy.
Yeah. And that's his longest title run.
and the character itself. Oh, man.
I mean, he had that champion for a long fucking time, yeah, dude.
There was a reason why, because, you know, he was over as champion because of his popularity.
Dude, and, yeah, know, he same can definitely time, you know, do it.
We see the little more aggressive side. I mean, even though he's not just the guy who wears glasses, doesn't speak, just this, gives you these little kicks of the shin. No, you see the aggressive side of Orange Cassidy. And we always know there is one, but you got to wait for the right moment. Like, going back to Jack Perry when he was, you know, the uber babyface in the Jungle Boy character. Like, no, one way or the other, we were going to see the aggressive dark side of him, and we have seen it.
Yeah.
So, now, as far as where does Jack Perry go from here, I mean, I don't know. But you know what? I'm just going to – we'll wait and see, and we'll see how things go. But
that was an interesting decision to have Garcia beat him. I mean, I'm Team Garcia all the way, dude. I think Danny Garcia deserved that champion a year ago, dude. He's such a good fucking wrestler. He's a great talent. But, like, the fact that Jack Perry had just won it, like, 2-3 months prior, and then they were like, we're just going to go ahead and drop it to him. That's cool, whatever. But I kind of wanted to see Jack Perry as a title holder fleshed out. I wanted to see him hold it a little bit longer, but
yeah,
I like seeing Garcia as champion too.
And when, like I said, when Jay White hit the Blade Runner on Marina Shafir, I mean, the crowd went crazy.
Yes, because we've been wanting it, dude. She's such an annoying character. She's so stupid.
I mean, the
fact
that she's part of the Death Riders, I mean, a lot of fans are actually happy with it because at first, you know, the way that she was being used by creative, at least they finally got her in a good position.
Yeah.
You know what? There's nothing wrong with a female enforcer in a stable. I mean, why not? I mean, come on. We saw that with Rhea Ripley in the Judgment Day. We saw that with Chyna in D-Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, yeah, but you know, God, what? Intergender wrestling has really actually, I mean, in the last couple of years, you see more and more and more of it.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Sometimes a woman working a match with a male wrestler, it's beneficial to both. It's very beneficial for the female wrestler, but it's also very beneficial for the male wrestler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't do it, though, like they should, but they play on that whole classic. You know, it's typical. It's, oh, you can't put your hands on her because it's a woman, like, especially when you're the good guy. And it's like, no, Jay White will do it. That's pretty fucking cool to finally see. That's kind of wild. It's like, man,
a lot of female wrestlers, I mean, they actually want to compete in intergender matches because, again, it's beneficial to them.
Well, so they should be allowed to.
And besides, this is choreography. I mean, it's like you see this in a film.
Yeah.
In a fight scene, you know, in a fight scene between a man and a woman. So.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, I mean, see, Bubba Ray Dudley said in an interview 4 years ago, you know, about people being this concerned about intergender wrestling. He asked basically the question, when did the world of wrestling get so soft? I mean, he's not wrong. He wasn't wrong, but.
Oh, it's been very soft, dude.
So the finish of the match was something, but man.
that ending was good, though, man. I got fired up.
I mean, the fact that, you know, he hit White with a Death Rider DDT, or, you know, the Paradigm Shift, as it was called, or the Dirty Deeds in WWE. Personally, I prefer Paradigm Shift because it just sounds so cool, but.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, Shafir, Wheeler Yuta, Claudio, they all interfere because, you know, it's no disqualifications, but that's how the match has to be. But. Man, then you have rated FTR, and you know what? And you notice Copeland came out to his WWE music.
Yeah, he did.
So I would imagine, I guess he gained ownership of it. And people are still asking, you know, why can't he, you know, why does he have to be known as Adam Copeland? I'm like, dude, whether he's Edge, whether he's Adam Copeland, we know who he is. He's still the same guy. It doesn't matter what name he goes with.
Yeah.
It's like when the Legion of Doom, you know, there were the Road Warriors and Legion of Doom, or the Dudley Boys or Team 3D.
Yeah.
You know, we know it's the same. There's no difference. You might see there might be differences in the character because of creative and because of the creative freedom you have outside of WWE, but no. Adam Copeland, Edge, what's the difference? He's the same guy.
Same person. Yeah, like
yeah.
Like his theme song, God, I can't remember the name of the band that played it, but they made it for him specifically in WWE. So he was legally able to use it for that reason. The only thing he had to change was in the very beginning.
Yeah, he had to kind of, yeah.
Because yeah, the real, you think the main, you know, song me line,
doesn't start the way, yeah.
Yeah, he had to change that because WWE did own the rights to that part of it. And so that's actually Beth Phoenix's voice for the AEW theme song. that does that you think you know me
I think
me
it
like.
Was until AEW's World End. I could have sworn it was the same one WWE. I mean, maybe I was just
no,
too
it's
excited.
The same song.
I mean, yeah.
It's the same song. It's just the beginning is different. The You Think You Know Me line, that's Beth
right.
Phoenix's voice because WWE.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah,
you're right. Okay, I think it's all. You know what? I think it's. Hasn't it been like that since he arrived at AEW?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you know what? I suffered a brain fart. Maybe
no, you're good.
Maybe I'm just so overwhelmed that he's back that you know I'm like, okay, I forgot about this. It was just
oh, no,
so
no,
good
was,
to hear the song again.
Oh yeah, I was excited. I was laying in bed when I watched it and I jumped
okay,
up because.
So obviously, I apologize for the confusion, but.
Oh no, you're good, dude. I was excited too. I jumped up seeing it because I love FTR, dude. They're like my. I will honestly say I think that they are the best tag team alive right now. But besides them, I love Edge too.
Hey,
I fucking
see,
love.
We're gonna see them against the Young Bucks again. Hey, FTR versus the Young Bucks. It's well documented,
yeah.
So we're gonna see that again. But,
oh yeah, man.
Yeah. So now that you have Adam Copeland in alliance, again rated FTR. I mean that promo that he cut on Moxley, literally saying, look at me when I'm talking to you, kid." He's like, I've been doing this, ever since. we saw that. So.
Yeah, dude, that was cool to see. Well, before I go, I got to ask you this, man. Because I've asked you about, like, who you think the best wrestler is, but, like, who do you think the best tag team is of all time? Like, for me, best tag team of all time is probably Triple H and Shawn Michaels as OGDX. But my personal favorite, like, today, currently, is FTR. The most overrated tag team, in my opinion, is the Usos.
You probably just hit a nerve there, but my favorite tag team of all time. That's a tough one. I mean, I could easily say the Dudley Boys. I could easily say the Legion of Doom. I could there's so many of them. I mean, or the the Steiner Brothers and whatnot, the Nasty Boys.
Fuck man,
that is extremely, extremely tough. Now. Or, the New Age Outlaws, the Road Dogg, and Badass Billy Gunn.
Right.
I can't name the best tag team, in my opinion, off the top of my head, but I can name a tag team that actually meant something to me personally.
Which one?
That would be the Rock and Sock Connection.
Yeah, I like them. They were funny.
Because
it was cool to see what they did
with it. I've said many, many times that the Mankind character reminds me a lot of my former self. You know, when I was a shy kid that was very, very quiet, that was often picked on. Couldn't like that, like the kid that everybody thought was weird and nobody liked, and then all of a sudden, who's basically the least popular kid in school, but then that kid becomes friends with the most popular kid in school, the star quarterback, the most, like I said, so basically, it reminds me of when a popular kid became my friend and, defended me against bullies and whatnot, so that's why
right.
It reminded me a lot of that. Like, I'm Mankind, it's like I said, like Mankind, the least. The guy like that who's teaming like that, so despite everything, but not that Mankind wasn't popular. I just like to say that the Mankind character reminds me a lot of my former self.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, the quiet, like that, teaming with The Rock, something you just never see coming, but the Rock and Sock Connection just had a very, very personal affection for me because it reminded me of when a very popular kid became my friend and started, like that. So,
okay, I can understand that.
Yeah. But again, I don't mean to say that the Mankind character was nobody liked or wasn't popular. Mankind character reminds me of somebody like a kid in school that nobody likes. He's shy. He's quiet. Everybody thinks he's weird. That's just kind of what it reminded me of a little bit.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I liked Mankind too. He was pretty cool.
Right. But again, going back to best tag team, man.
I almost said Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. I'm gonna have to do a top five, actually, like a top five, because it's hard, man, because to me, I think that FTR is one of the greats. I think Motor City Machine Guns are one of the greats. I think Young Bucks are fucking phenomenal. Dude, I love the Bushwhackers. I know a lot of people don't, but I think they were cool. Midnight Rockers were awesome.
Of course, so the Rock and Roll Express. Of course, the New Day. You know what? The Brothers of Destruction. Can't believe that didn't come to mind. The Natural Disasters.
I like that one, too. But I like the Rivalry more than I like them as tag team partners.
Of course, Los Guerreros.
Yeah.
And of course, the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart, the late Jim Neidhart. Mr. Fuji and Professor Tanaka.
The Outsiders were good, but I guess they don't really count because they would end up becoming the NWO faction, which that's what it was. It was a faction.
You know what? A team that, you know what, out of all of them I could pick, I think I probably, you know what, because of course, you know, there's the Hardy Boys as well, but of course the Rock and Roll Express, Edge and Christian. Now the Legion of Doom is overwhelmingly the best, but you know, if there's one that I really want to, one that I really want to give more recognition to would be the Briscoe Brothers.
Yeah, they're good too. I think they're amazing.
So you know what? Out of all the names that I can easily name as the greatest tag team, while they're all great, you know what? One that I really want to give recognition to that I think is the best tag team, the Briscoe Brothers. Not to knock anybody else, but I feel like, you know what? I want to give more recognition to the Briscoe Brothers, especially because when we tragically lost one of them.
Yeah.
And the Briscoe Brothers have done it all. Done it all, the Briscoe Brothers.
Oh, yeah, man.
So, you know what?
I kind of liked that they didn't go to WWE.
Me too, because... yeah, God knows what Vince would have done.
Well, yeah, they were their own thing, man. They were meant to be outside.
Well, you know,
of
and another tag team, you know what? The Lucha Brothers, Rey Fénix and Pentagon Jr. Dude, the Lucha Brothers. Oh, that now that's a that was a great tag team.
They were okay. I liked them. I have a hard time with luchadors though, man, because every time I see one, I immediately look at them and think you're not Rey Mysterio. I know how fucking biased you know that is.
Masked luchadors, they don't need to be Rey Mysterio. Not in a bad way. Dude, but
it's
you know
huge.
What? That's one of the many things that makes Mexican pro wrestling so unique, especially the mass luchadors. They are all unique in their own way.
Yep.
The high flyers, everything, you know what? You know, the characters, the way they present themselves.
Rey Mysterio is the one that kind of made that famous, though, in my opinion. Like, he's the one that made it popular, the whole masked luchador wrestler. Because...
right, and then in WCW, when they unmasked him, which Conan was incredibly... say critical of, which I don't blame him. I mean, personally, even if I'm a heel, I would not want to basically be in a position to where I win a match and rip off the mask of a luchador because of the tradition in Mexico. Like, no, I do not want to rip the mask off the wrestler. Even now, if it's just where I rip off the mask, but they cover his face, I'm like, you know what? Okay, if I do that, okay, fine. But if it's to where he has to be unmasked, if I beat him, I'm like, let's not do that. Let's not do that.
I do it, man, just because to be a heel means to press buttons. It means to go over the edge, and that's the biggest slap in the face to that country. One of the biggest slap in the faces.
Then I guess under the right circumstances, I would do it.
Yeah.
Under the right circumstances. But I would
really
love
depends.
To have a stunt to where I attack a wrestler, you know, pull his mask off, especially pull it off in a desecrating way, again, to draw that heel heat. Then, yeah, I mean, under the right circumstances, yeah.
Yeah.
So, because you know how the rule is in Mexico, if you're unmasked and your face is seen, if your face becomes a matter of public image,
mm-hmm.
that's it. You can't go back to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the concern part of it, because you know, again, I'm like, you know, if I do this, he can't. I mean, Rey Mysterio ended up being masked again in WWE, but if you look at him in public, I don't even think he wears the mask. If I'm correct.
No, not in public, no.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I'm like, yeah. So I was like, yeah, if I do this, he can't go back. So, yeah. Well, this has really been an honor, Tony. Any final words?
I do got to say, man, thank you for having me on. Because, like I said, I really enjoyed this pay-per-view, man. I enjoyed last year's World's End. I thought it was great. Last year's Wrestle Dream was great. So I very much enjoyed all these new AEW pay-per-views. It's weird to me, dude, because like I said, they can't, for whatever reason, they can't put on a good fucking Dynamite every week, but they can put on a good pay-per-view. That is something they need to work on. And I'm hoping they go all out this Wednesday, dude. Like, I'm pumped. I got my HBO Max all set up. Like, I've been telling my wife January can't come soon enough because I'm excited for Raw on Netflix and AEW on fucking Max because I got both. Like, I'm so pumped for that. Other than that, though, man, thank you for having me on. I do appreciate it, and try to come back on again soon. Like I said, dude, we got to do like an episode where we talk about like the greatest tag teams or something along those lines.
You know what? That's something we could also do on your show, the Great Growth Podcast. So,
yes, sir, and thank you for reminding me, actually, because I completely forgot to plug my info there. For those of you watching, if you're looking for something that's a little edgy, ironic, essentially just comical, if you're looking for a good time to be able to shut your brain off and just chill, you got to look for the Great Girth Podcast. We talk about pretty much everything. I tell people all the time, we are a podcast about nothing, literally. We sit down, we talk about whatever comes to mind, and then we just throw it at the wall and see if that works. Some days it's politics, some days it's pop culture, other days movies, music, video games, you name it, we got it. Otherwise, thank you, Alex. I do appreciate it, man. I'm excited to come on again soon.
Well, thank you very much. I would love to have you come back on as soon as possible. You can find Ringside Chaos wherever you get your podcasts, but as I said, the show is no longer on YouTube for reasons I cannot disclose, but you can still find the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, so please hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell. That way, Tony and I know for sure that you're not going to miss out on any exciting upcoming content. Tony, thank you very, very much. Everybody, thank you very, very much, and Happy New Year.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.